Hi, internet friends. It's John and Drew here, addressing you directly for the first time ever, because this is a special episode. There was an Apple special event today in Chicago that just wrapped up 5 minutes ago, and we wanted to talk about what they announced, because we love Apple events and we love Apple news, and there's going to be a lot more of it over the course of this show. However, we figured not everyone wants to hear the gory details of announcements from a technology company, so we're releasing this as a special episode in the feed, and you can skip it if you don't like it, and we'll be hopefully making a habit of that as there are more Apple events over the course of our time together.
There was something very internet frenzy about the fact that this was a live blogged Apple event. That was a very 2012 way of experiencing an Apple event, since they're all streamed these days and this one wasn't. So it felt appropriate that this is our inaugural Apple event special anyways. It took me back, took me way back.
That is totally true. I was even using Twitter to follow it.
That's extremely 2012 for you.
I mean, including using Tweetbot as my client. So, yes, it's very, very, very old school, which is funny because this is about school. Actually, it's about new school. But the reason why I knew that it would be interesting for us to look at this event was because the old school of Apple was so formative around the time that we were in school. So the updated version of that is pretty remarkable from the standpoint of someone who grew up using Apple computers in school.
They showed a slide of a kid using like an Apple II or whatever that computer was, right, during the presentation?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they said that 1978 was the year that Apple started its education initiatives, which is pretty close to the beginning of Apple itself.
That is. That's so crazy. And I mean, for me, obviously, I did not use the Apple II. But I have such fond memories of using Apple computers in schools. I don't remember exactly when my school switched from whatever PCs they were using to Macs. And obviously, I went from school to school and moved from Colorado to Florida. So I changed school systems while I was in school. But I remember using the hockey puck mouse when I was a kid. So I must have been doing something on that. And then I have very distinct memories of using the first time I ever touched a creative program, Photoshop, was on a Mac, a Bondi Blue iMac to be precise. And those experiences, they stay with me to this day. And I don't know how much I would have enjoyed using those already pretty archaic and crazy programs on a PC. It certainly felt better to be using them on a Mac. And thinking back, it must have been around the inception of OS 10.
It was Mac OS 10 then.
I remember some teacher being excited by it, you know, which I didn't really know anything about at that time. So it's funny how long these things have gone on and, you know, how much further back it goes even before my own education. But they're still making some major strides, and that's really remarkable.
I did actually have an Apple II in one classroom in elementary school. They were Macs, early Macs, coincident. I mean, this was the old computer, was the Apple II. But I still found something very charming about it, playing pseudo-educational, very, very, very low-complexity games on 5.5-inch floppy disks on the Apple II. And then the Mac and I grew up together in school. I remember when Mac OS X arrived also, and when iMacs arrived. And at the time, it seemed revolutionary, but compared to what they announced today, basically the ability to do word processing was what we gained. And some crude drawing that probably would not have been acceptable if turned in as homework.
Right.
But the news today makes me really excited for the children of this era.
Yeah.
So we should probably get into it, huh?
Yeah, let's do it.
We'll just go down the list of what they announced. And I think that iPad is clearly the place to start. Prior to the event, there was a lot of speculation about what was going to be announced and questions of whether there was going to be a low-end Mac announced at this event, because there have been supply chain rumors of Macs coming. And the fact that there was no Mac news at this event, except for one application that was only for teachers, I think is a pretty telling indication of what the future looks like for the Mac. So the big hardware, the big computer news, if you will, for this event was the iPad. It was an update to the entry-level 9.7-inch iPad, the classic size iPad, which is already priced at $329, which is the cheapest you can get into an iPad. And they announced an updated version that supports the Pencil, which has only been for iPad Pro so far. It seems to have, to some extent, the same kinds of sensors as the iPad Pro, in addition to the ones that it needs to support the Pencil for drawing and handwriting and stuff. It's got reasonable cameras. It's got the option for LTE, same battery that we're all used to, the A10 processor, so like the one generation ago processor, the Touch ID sensor. So it's an iPad, just like the one you know and love, except that now the Pencil has come to the base model iPad, which is a pretty interesting development. It was priced at $329 before. The previous entry-level iPad was $329. That price stays the same, but the new education price is $299. That is a pretty compelling price point, I would say, although the Pencil is
not cheap.
So the other hardware that was announced to supplement this was from Logitech. They have a rugged combo case for $99, which is like a child-proofing device for a slab of glass that they're going to be holding in their hands, as well as a stylus called the Crayon, which is $49, which Apple said, quote, works great with Pencil-enabled apps. So the Apple Pencil is $99, which is a pretty pricey add-on for an education use.
When you have to buy a lot of them.
Yes, especially when you have to buy a lot of them.
It's kind of strange because, to back up a little bit, I mean, it's interesting to me that they've positioned the new iPad around the Apple Pencil so much, because so far it's felt kind of like a premium device that's for a very specific subset of users. Mm-hmm. And now they're positioning it as the main accessory. I mean, I would have said that the main accessory of the iPad Pro was the smart keyboard, not the Apple Pencil. Mm-hmm. But now the main accessory of the iPad, full stop, both Pro and non-Pro, is the Apple Pencil. There's no smart connector to be found on this iPad, so you can't have a smart keyboard. And it makes it seem like it's a much more valuable thing, which is interesting. And I think there's going to be a lot of people that bring up the old argument about how no one needed a stylus on the iPhone and Steve Jobs didn't want it, and you know, all the weird stuff that comes up. But the concept is much more centered around not user input for user input's sake, but marking up and annotation and creating and writing and drawing and all of the things that a pencil is really good for, not just browsing around and opening Safari windows. Do you have an Apple Pencil?
I do, but I almost never use it.
Yeah, same. It's the same thing for me.
But not never, never.
I have it and I love it when I use it, but I use it for very few things. I use it for touching up photos. I use it for occasionally marking up documents. That's really it. And, you know, it sits in my bag all the time, but it sits in my bag dead. So I'm really curious to see what this is going to do and if this is going to really be a big thing, because, I mean, I guess I would use it more if I was in school, mm-hmm. because there's more uses for a pencil. I certainly don't use pencils or pens as much as I did when I was in school. I used them every day.
Right.
I had to buy lots and lots of pens. I had to buy lots and lots of mechanical pencil lead, mm-hmm. and I don't do those things anymore. So I guess, one, I'm curious to see if this takes off for students, and two, if this really fosters and facilitates development of apps for the pencil. Because right now, there's not a whole lot outside of drawing and editing in creative ways.
There is software news from this event that expands the use case of the pencil in pretty pedestrian, everyday ways. I wonder whether the fact that the pencil only worked with very expensive iPads before was limiting how many people were adopting it.
Exactly.
It's kind of hard to predict, I think, how many people would have used a pencil if they were, you know, able to in previous generations of the devices. But now the entry-level iPad is going to support it, and we'll see. I should note that there is another Apple Pencil in my house, and my wife has drawn a lot of really awesome stuff with it, including the family tree diagram that we printed out with the wedding schedule at our wedding.
Cool.
And, you know, all kinds of other like works of art, practical works of art. So people who are inclined that way can definitely get a lot out of it already. And now with the new software that Apple announced, which maybe should be the next thing we talk about, there are more ways to use it in a lot of those ways that parallel the ways we were burning through pencil lead when we were in school.
You sent me the link yesterday about the fact that Chrome, the first Chrome OS tablet, is now been announced.
Yes.
In pretty direct competition with the new iPad that had not yet existed when the Chromebook was announced.
Yesterday.
Which I think is priced at $329.
That's right.
So Apple is cutting them out by about $30 for students at the $299 price point, which is interesting because I typically would feel like the iPad would still be the premium product, the one that has the higher price point compared to other stuff. And I mean, that's pretty remarkable that they were able to get it to $299 and beat out Chrome.
Yeah, I mean, it shows how much margin Apple is willing to sacrifice to stay in this market. And the fact that the Chromebook can't get under $329 in just the education market, the way that Apple is able to reduce the $329 iPad, shows how little margin there is for Acer in producing that device. It does also have a stylus, and it has that insert into the device, like the Samsung Note thing.
Mm-hmm.
The pencil is famously difficult to manage.
Right.
I love the idea of children carrying around these $100 styluses that roll right off a table if you put them down.
You know, it's a crazy thing, and man, I can't believe I'm about to start this sentence because I hate when other people start this sentence, but I had a dream last night. But I actually genuinely had a dream last night about the Apple Pencil where I lost the cap.
Mm.
That was the whole dream. Mm-hmm. And I think that that says something about the anxiety that I have about this tiny little white cap that if I remove it and lose it, I'll never find it again.
Yep.
So I'm assuming that we'll see many Apple Pencils with the lightning dongle exposed to the world.
Yes.
As these caps come off and are never found again. And I have memories of half-broken equipment from my education days, and maybe that will be the story that many students tell later is, oh yeah, I had the Apple Pencil and, you know, the little dongle busted off and I had to charge it in this weird angle and the cap was never around. And, you know, I wonder what will happen, because putting this pristine technology in the hands of children is, I mean, I have a problem with it as a, you know, adult, so I can't imagine what it's going to be like in schools. But I'm assuming that Apple is deciding that it's worthwhile anyways, and also giving this weird Logitech crayon that I see does not have a cap, or at least it doesn't look like it has a cap, and is a lot cheaper to replace by half the price. So maybe that'll be one of the ways they get around that.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that Apple announced it on stage, the crayon, makes me think that they're pretty sure that a lot of schools are going to go with that option. And maybe the pencils will be reserved for the art students or something.
That can handle their watercolors,
right,
without spilling them everywhere.
Right.
So they can probably handle the Apple Pencil stylus.
Precisely. So let's talk about the software that Apple is releasing that will supplement the fact that the device can use the pencil now. There are all new versions of Pages, Numbers, and Keynote, the core Apple applications in the suite known as iWork, that all support pencils, pencil, the pencil, Apple Pencil.
Apple Pencil coming to iPad.
Yes, precisely. What it sounds like is you can add drawings into documents just like you can in Notes already, as just like a little section of the page that you can draw in. And then there's also a new feature in beta of Pages, which is called Smart Annotation, which lets you mark up a Pages document with a pencil, and the annotations stay anchored to the text even if you edit it, which is really cool. So that's, you can imagine how that will serve teachers. They're able to write, you know, in the margins just like they do on papers, but it's a living software document, and the annotations will go along with whatever changes are made. So that's pretty cool. That's coming out today, and hopefully it means that there is a more practical, everyday use case for the pencil now that the core suite of productivity applications support it.
I remember a long time ago hearing that annotation was coming to the Apple Pencil, and it seemed to be one of those weird rumors where it had a lot of, it had some legs, like it seemed like it was coming from within Apple, and then maybe it got shut down because it wasn't working perfectly or they ran into different problems. But I seem to remember something about you could have it so that the Apple Pencil basically did annotations no matter where you were.
Hmm.
But that definitely intrigued me. I don't know if that will ever be a thing that exists, but it's interesting to see annotation coming in this sense. It would definitely get me to use Pages more.
Well, there's another reason to use Pages more, which is the next thing they announced, which I thought for most of the event was going to be my favorite thing they announced, but there's actually something right at the end that made me way more excited. But I, in terms of things that I'm going to use, it's definitely this. The application formerly known as iBooks Author for Mac, which Apple released at their last education-themed event a few years ago, was the first-party way to create, you know, interesting, dynamic ebooks that you could publish and put into iBooks. And iBooks, of course, was one of the flagship things about the launch of the iPad. It's one of the fundamental features of the iPad as far as Steve Jobs was concerned. So a few years back, they announced this application called iBooks Author that lets you generate really nice ebooks, but they launched it and then it languished.
They launched it as a standalone application for the Mac.
Right.
Which put a few hurdles in your way of developing in iBooks.
Chiefly that you couldn't interact with the content the way that you would be on an iPad.
Right.
It's one of those classic things that people say about the iPad. It's analogous to the thing that they say about writing software for the iPad, that there's no Xcode for iPad. So writing iPad apps is hindered by the fact that you have to do it on a Mac. Well, now iBooks Author is no more. It is being rolled into Pages as a feature of the you know, basic document creation app that Apple makes, and Pages is now getting templates for making books. And because it's a feature of Pages now, that means it's available on all platforms where Pages is available, so you can make books on the iPad.
Have you ever made a book in iBooks Author?
No, I like opened it and started tinkering with it, and then I realized like I don't actually have a book to make right now.
I mean, that's the same for me, and I kind of have had books to make, but I think the process of doing it on a Mac just wasn't quite right. And having the ability to do it on an iPad is such a different experience to me. So I'm really excited by this. I texted you that I'm excited to see people like Fatichi start messing around with this and show me the way forward, because I'm sure that there will be a few people who are diehard iPad fans who start diving into this and figuring out what long-form content, even though, man, I still hate the word content, long-form pieces will look like using this sort of format. So it's cool. It's cool to me to know that there is this new method of creating something long and beautiful and full of images or pictures or interaction that now has such a low-stakes way of getting it into the hands of your friends or readers or whatever it might be. And yeah, I mean, it's definitely very exciting to me. It is one of these weird things, right, where it might feel daunting still, like you don't have the piece required to use it. But I'm assuming that, again, this is another interesting thing where I think it makes a great deal of sense to pitch as an education-centered concept. Hey, if you're a teacher, you can make something for your students. And hey, if you're a student, you can make something for your homework using this app. And it's going to look way better than opening up PowerPoint and trying to do it there.
Speaking of content, creating content, a lot of what they were doing today seems aimed at that central criticism of the iPad that has been there since the beginning, that, oh, that's a consumption device.
Yeah.
You can't really create with it. And I mean, a lot of us have known that that isn't true, especially from the beginning, but a lot of what they've done today seems aimed at getting even young people who've never created things before to create things with it. I mean, they actually got one of the teachers who went up on stage at the event, an elementary school teacher, to say the words, quote, "they are creators of content instead of consumers of information,"
yeah,
referring to her students, because they make videos to present their work. And, I was thinking about the ways I turned in my homework. I mean, I printed out word processing documents that were set in the default formatting settings for word processing documents. And that was basically the extent of what I was using a computer to turn in as my homework. And this teacher is letting students present their work as video. And I think that's so amazing. And you just said, like, yeah, iBooks Author, or now creating iBooks with Pages, is a fantastic capability for teachers to have to give assignments to their students. But you know, there's no reason that students couldn't also use this to create a more engaging presentation of the homework that they're doing. And I think that leads pretty well into the thing that I was referring to before that I was actually most excited about this whole event, which was a new curriculum. So Apple talked a lot about its existing education initiatives, and we can go back and talk about some of those because I think they're maybe a little less newsworthy, though still awesome. They have this course for students called Everyone Can Code, which is a way to teach students to program. using Swift Playgrounds and teaching Swift as a basic form of literacy, as they kept saying. And there were some updates to that today as well, but building on the success of the Everyone Can Code curriculum, they announced a new one called Everyone Can Create, which has music, video, photography, and drawing lessons for students to learn to create in those media. And they also have these lessons at Apple stores that anyone can go to for learning the software that Apple makes for creating. Now that a $329 computer or a $299 computer for students can support this incredibly precise digital drawing device, like hand-drawn visual art enters the category of things that you can learn to make in a fundamental and powerful way using Apple computers. And now Apple's creating the facilities and software for students to learn to create music and videos and take and edit photos.
And draw. I want to do the drawing one.
Yeah.
I need those lessons.
I mean, maybe the problem with the adoption of pencil, the fact that we're not using pencil, is because we haven't learned to draw yet, and now we can.
Yeah, it's true.
So to me, this is actually the biggest announcement, is no one else can do this the way that Apple can, because Apple provides software like GarageBand and iMovie. I mean, they didn't mention iMovie. GarageBand did get an extra sound pack today, and that's all they said about it. But to me, as a musician, if I had been able to learn GarageBand as a student, I mean, I guess I could, but like it was on an iMac in a computer lab. I couldn't, you know, sit in there and make music all day.
Right.
Like I could if I had my iPad. If I had an iPad, I could make music on the playground. I could make music at home. I could make music in the back of the car. And the fact that Apple's now providing courses for teaching students how to make music using the software that they provide that's best in class for making music, and that's profoundly cool to me.
It really is. I saw someone on the Verge's live blogging page say that the Everyone Can Create course is really a great way to foreground the iPad's strengths against the Chromebook and really everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, this is the major distinction between Apple and the rest of them, is that they're not just creating a device that you can use to access the internet and a word processor. They're creating a whole platform that you're supposed to be completely immersed in and creating something from. And I mean, that's why I've always loved it, Max. And that's something that I think is their major strength, that I love seeing them lean into really heavily. And it makes sense that they've allowed the iPad and iOS as a whole to really develop and mature as a platform to get to this point where they can absolutely do this kind of thing. And yeah, I mean, I'm 100% with you. I think this is incredible. I wish that I would have had this kind of stuff. I learned how to use Photoshop in a schoolroom, and I learned how to use Lightroom. But both of those were completely reliant on a teacher sitting there over my shoulder and teaching me what to do, or a curriculum that was immediately outdated.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's not as true as it used to be. I mean, it sure was true when you had to work out of a paper book that had been published 5 years ago. I remember learning how to do some web development in high school using a curriculum that recommended a piece of software that had been dead for 4 years. So, you know, that kind of thing was a hindrance to my ability to learn. And that won't be true when it's teaching you how to use things immediately. It's a one-to-one. The people that are creating the software are teaching you how to use it. And that's really remarkable. It could be seen, right? It could be seen as an advertisement for GarageBand, an advertisement for Pages.
Yeah, but GarageBand's free.
Exactly. It's much more than that. And I think that it's doing the extremely profound and important work of locking students into Apple for their entire lifetimes, just like they did for us as kids.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, they are doing it because they have these powerful, powerful tools for creation that are on this $299 device that you are allowed to use at school.
Mm-hmm.
And you are encouraged to create with. And that is, I mean, that's seriously incredible. I think the last video that they played was kind of about homework being cool again or something like that. Of course, it's hard to tell from a live blog what the video was saying.
Yeah.
But I feel that. I totally believe that. And I think for a long time, our school systems have been a bit too obsessed with drilling a certain set of information into your brain and then making you repeat it back And Apple is going in the complete opposite direction with these creative patterns and saying that you can just be a creator. And if you create something new and important, then that is an A-plus job. Mm-hmm. And I love that. And I really do hope that, you know, has some sort of reach into the public school systems, which it seems like they're doing in Chicago.
Yeah. I got from Tim Cook's intro three kind of key words for what Apple's philosophy about tech in the classroom is, which is that they think it's more engaging, they think it is empowering, and they think that it is an equalizing force. You know, they didn't lay it out as three E's in a corny way like that, but it just so happens that the three words I pulled out all started with E. This is clearly about the engaging part, right? That if homework is cool again, that means that it's fun to do, and that's the fundamental thing. And, you know, we know how much kids love their iPads, so Apple is, in a good way, taking advantage of that by making more compelling experiences for them using a device and a form of interaction that they love. And the empowering part comes from it being, and the equalizing part, come from it being the way into the economy. It's the world around them runs on this same stuff. And so Apple sees their role as opening the door. And the idea of getting it into every classroom is a kind of profound statement about society. It's worth noting that the school that they chose is pretty much the ideal school from Apple's point of view. It's the largest public high school in Chicago, and it's one of the oldest. And the thing that they pulled out to say is that it produces more PhDs than any school in the country. So this is clearly a special place, but they chose a public school. They chose a school that they think could be a model for the baseline for education in America if we prioritize the right things.
I really love that.
Apple has a bunch of tools for education that are specific to education uses, some of which Drew and I wish we could use ourselves.
Seriously.
And some of those got pretty interesting updates. There's also some new apps. They referred to the shared iPad service, which means that multiple users, i.e. students, can log in to their own stuff on the same iPad.
Which I want.
Yes, I want. Every family wants. Every family wants one iPad that they can all share.
Yes.
But that doesn't currently exist for anyone except students. They also have software called Apple School Manager, which is like an admin way of managing Apple IDs for students. So those two things are they already exist, but they're fundamental to how the rest of this stuff works. So they bumped the free iCloud storage for student users from the 5 glorious gigabytes that everybody gets for free to 200 gigabytes, which is, you know, it's almost like getting rid of the tiny devices. Finally, the era of 5 gigabyte stuff. Well, I guess actually most people still have 5 free gigabytes of iCloud.
It's not quite over.
No, it's not quite over, but for students it is. And then there's some new stuff. They have the Apple Classroom app, which does already exist, is coming to Mac in beta. And this is the thing that teachers use to manage their whole class.
How great is it that the one thing that really gets a shout out on Mac is for the olds?
Yep, the old people. Yeah. So this is the only time the word Mac was uttered in the entire show, maybe.
We know that you want to work off of a MacBook.
Yep.
40-year-old teacher. So, okay, fine. We've added this feature for you.
So there's your Mac news for this event. And then there's a new app, an all new app called Schoolwork, which sounds very cool. It's cloud based and it's for assigning homework and handouts to students. In a way, it's like sending an email, but you can send the work and you can have PDFs and include links. And this app also connects to the apps that students use for doing their work so that the teachers can see their progress. And it can even connect inside of apps to specific activities so that the assignment can say, write an essay in response to this chapter of the book or whatever. And that's powered by a new API, which is called ClassKit, which is already out in iOS 11 betas in the latest versions of iOS 11. So that just sounds like a very seamless, very Apple-y experience for how homework is created and how homework is done and how it's all managed.
Again, to me, telling that that's only on the iPad, because I assume that they are assuming that the people who will be adopting this are the people who are really technology forward.
Right.
And are already using tablets and already familiar with some of Apple's ecosystem. So the old 50-year-old history professor, you're probably not going to be able to use Schoolwork with him.
Well, maybe that's true. But my grandmother is an iPad Pro user, and she's really good at it. And so hopefully this is the kind of superpower that Apple thinks is equally eye-opening to people of all ages.
Yeah, you know, that's a completely good point. My grandmother was the type of person who thought that Yahoo.com was the internet before she had an iPad. And once she had an iPad, she started really exploring things. And I just had a phone call with her yesterday where she was talking about all the websites that she's keeping up with and, you know, learning about. And I think she was buying a book on iBooks that I had recommended to her and that kind of thing. So yes, you are completely right. If there is the ability to adopt it, it will come through the iPad and not so a more archaic type of application on some different type of device. But I still think that it's saying this is the future for the people who are ready to embrace the future.
That's right. It's really telling. There's also a new program for teachers to learn. I didn't get a whole lot of detail on this, but they may not have revealed much detail. It's called Apple Teacher, and it's a free self-paced program for online learning for teachers, and it awards badges like the fitness app does. I mean, maybe that's what this is for. It's a way of helping teachers continue their own education and embrace this era that Apple is heralding. They've also added an AR kit module to the app development with Swift curriculum in the Everyone Can Code course that I mentioned earlier. So now they're expanding the kinds of programming that are taught to students to the cutting edge, to the upcoming paradigm for how technology is going to work, known as augmented reality, which is pretty heavy to think about, that students are going to know how to program AR apps.
You and I, I'm sure, in a future episode, will have a long and detailed conversation about augmented reality.
Yes, I look forward to it.
Yeah. Did they kind of highlight any apps or use cases for the AR? I couldn't really tell.
The thing that they mentioned was a frog dissection application. I remember dissection from school. It was pretty hardcore.
Yeah.
And maybe that's important, but it certainly seems like a valid application of augmented reality in the classroom to make that a virtual experience.
Yeah, I see they also did something for Boulevard where you can see paintings in the classroom and kind of like get up close to them, interact with them by looking around. And then the World Wildlife Fund's Free Rivers, which is a environment that sits on top of a tabletop. So it's kind of like a whole ecosystem.
Ooh.
And you can see like a dam being built and how it impacts the river, which that sounds really cool.
That does sound cool.
That sounds like a very interesting education use case, is instead of having to have some crazy diorama that costs a ton of money and has a one-use lifespan, instead letting everyone interact and, you know, having just a tabletop and everyone has their own iPad and they can all see different things that are completely inside of their own device and, you know, interact with it at their own pace. That's something that I think is really interesting, right? About when technology becomes front and center in education, is the pace changes for every student.
Mm.
I don't know about you, but one of my least favorite memories of school was when I felt like I was falling behind the rest of the class, just even in a lesson, because you couldn't raise your hand and say, I totally missed that and very critical and important step. Would you please go back and show it to me again?
Mm.
But you can absolutely do that if it's on your iPad, on your screen, and you just get to catch up when you get to catch up. And that kind of stuff is really intriguing to me. The frog dissection thing is again, that same kind of concept where it's your own experience.
And there's no do-overs when you're dissecting a real frog.
Exactly. and it also smells terrible from the formaldehyde. So there's many good uses of AR.
So they're trying to get students learning to program for the first time into the pipeline to learn how to make AR software, which we've mentioned on past episodes, and I really look forward to the episode where we discuss Apple's new glasses.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Someday. that don't yet exist.
But certainly will.
Yes, they certainly will. And I think that Apple's trying to get them while they're young because they know that the next real app platform coming around the corner is the one that floats freestanding in the world in three dimensions.
Yeah, I mean, if I was a kid in a classroom and I was able to even interact on a slight level of the building of the AR platform, that would definitely pique my interest and let me understand it in a way that I honestly and genuinely don't right now.
Yeah.
So that is really neat. And it will be one of those things that is a critical and key component to look at as they continue talking about augmented reality to get hints at the future of Apple as a technology company.
Anything else you want to throw in about today's event before we sign off?
The only thing I wanted to mention was the rumors going up to this event seemed to point towards, they definitely pointed towards an iPad, but people's vision of this was more of a ruggedized iPad with a keyboard. That was kind of the thinking, right?
Yeah, well, what is this case, this Logitech rugged combo case? That I didn't actually see any description of it.
I don't think they showed a picture of it.
But combo, what is combo about it if it's not a keyboard case?
Yeah, that's true. But at the same time, that's not the base model. Because wasn't there a thing, was that Jason Snell that had talked about the concept of like a complete all-in-one keyboard, iPad, tablet thing?
He's been dreaming of that for a little while, and he calls it the iBook. He wants the iBook branding to return. It's basically an iOS laptop. I think it was Stephen Hackett who had the idea that it would be, well, they both have kids, so but I don't know. I imagine Stephen Hackett having more expensive Apple devices floating around the house all the time, I guess.
Yeah.
He was the one, I think, who noted that the best education version of this device would be ruggedized somehow. But I think he was describing it as a keyboard case of some kind. And there was a question, you know, is this thing going to have a smart connector on it so that it can have a real keyboard attached, or is it going to be Bluetooth? And it sounds like, you know, Bluetooth is the answer.
Bluetooth's the way. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Would you have wanted to see that? Do you think that that would have been better? How do you feel about that?
I do think that it's an interesting form factor to think about. I think that it's one that I could even imagine wanting an all-in-one iOS device, because I don't think, because the smart keyboard is not ideal for all situations. For me, it's a little too, I mean, it's a good compromise for when I need portability, but I'd much rather work on some kind of all-in-one thing. So I'm looking at this, the Logitech site has been updated. I'm looking at this thing. It is a very intense, rugged keyboard with the iPad kind of embedded inside of a dock, and the front cover of it has a full keyboard with hardware switches that actually looks more satisfying to use than the keyboard cover does. And for kids, I mean, I think something invulnerable looking like this is the right idea. I've never used an iPad inside of a keyboard case, and I know a lot of people do. I'm sure the Bluetooth latency would be something I would notice. I don't know if there are any good smart connector versions of it. It doesn't seem like a necessary product, has been my reaction to all of this. Like, I can imagine wanting a little MacBook, you know, the existing MacBook, like that's something that I can imagine myself using. Would I rather have an iPad that I can't take the keyboard off of? I can't really imagine that I would, but I can imagine that there are people who would.
Unlock the educational potential of iPad in K-12 classrooms, it says. So Yeah, this is the device to drop on the floor a few times, huh?
Yep. When it's closed, it appears that there is no exposed surface of the iPad at all.
No, absolutely not. It is stuck in there. And is that a place for a stylus? The flap is for the Logitech Crayon.
It appears to use its own fake smart connector, and so you can actually tear off the keyboard, which is cool.
So in a weird way, this is the iBook.
Yeah.
Because it is this gigantic, keyboard-centric, unbreakable, ruggedized iPad when you stick it in this case that I'm assuming is not really intended to be bought as a one-off, but is definitely intended to be bought in lots of 500 or whatever it is.
For sure. Yeah, it even has easy asset tagging as one of the features of it.
Oh, yes.
It's got a transparent window on the back that lets you scan it so you know who's got which ones and stuff.
So they kind of made it.
Yeah, they did kind of. It's actually more usable looking than the smart keyboard cover does. I mean, it has like a kickstand angle thing that lets you adjust the angle of it to whatever you want. The keyboard, again, is a grown-up keyboard with real keys and real switches. And even the T half size arrow keys that everybody misses from Apple keyboards, it looks kind of great.
This is a fun conceit to me, is that does need to exist, but it is not the front and center way of the iPad to exist. This is not the way that Apple wants to pitch the iPad for schools.
Right.
But they understand that it's a important and valuable piece of the educational system. They're just going to talk about it real quick and say that Logitech's got this.
Yep.
Which, I mean, even that is interesting, that both the Crayon and this ruggedized case are being made by a third-party company, I'm assuming very closely with Apple.
Yeah, clearly.
In a weird way, this looks like an Apple device, this ruggedized keyboard case, but It's not.
Nope.
And the same thing with the crayon. It looks like an Apple device. I mean, it looks like it has the same tip, the Apple Pencil tip, but it's not.
Yeah, the closest they would come to talking about it was that they said it, quote, works great with pencil-enabled apps, unquote.
So that has to be the same tip. It has to be the same technology, right? I mean, that just is really interesting.
Would Apple license the W1 chip or whatever it's called to them? It's hard to say. Maybe they would. And, you know, if it's almost as good for student purposes, it's still probably going to be fine. I mean, I don't know how much handwriting they're going to do.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem to be the reason why they're pitching this. They're letting teachers scribble in the margins of their papers. And what they want students to be doing with it, I presume, is drawing.
Yeah. I mean, to me, this is just another tell of the future of Apple, which is the future of Apple in education isn't a massive, ruggedized, keyboard-centric device. It's a standalone tablet that is actually more for drawing than it is for typing. Mm-hmm. We are all talking about, obviously, it needs a keyboard. And obviously, that's the main device and that's the main accessory. And Apple seems to be saying that that's not the case. The main accessory is a pencil for creating and for drawing and sketching and doodling. It is, I mean, all of the slides were doodled by and had line drawings everywhere. And It wasn't about type. It was about sketching. And that is a real tell about what Apple thinks is the future of schools and education and tablets.
And making things.
Exactly, and making.